Hello, everyone. This is Dorit Sasson, creator of Giving Voice to Your Story. You can find me at www.givingavoicetothevoicelessbook.com. And my purpose in this radio show, as you know, is to provide a platform for authors and speakers and entrepreneurs who have a really important message, a very powerful message to share with the world, but also who have used their own personal story as a vehicle to share this message with the rest of the world and engage us as readers that way. And in my hand, and soon I'll be welcoming my special guest, but in my hand I'm holding a very powerful book. It's called The Magnificent Truths of Our Existence. Unlock the deeper reality that guarantees permanent happiness. And with me on the call today is the author of this very powerful book, Daniel Parmigiani. And thank you, Daniel, so much for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Dorit. It's great to be on your show, and thank you for the great introduction.
You're welcome. And before we get started, I just wanted to share what I got from this book, and you'll understand why I'm saying what I'm saying, but it has nothing to do with where I am right now with your book. When I picked up this book and the invitation was clear that I was meant to interview you, I looked at this book and I'm like, oh no, not another book like this about happiness. Oh, I'm so out of it. And it's just, you know, another buzzword. And I didn't approach it. I have to be honest, at the beginning, my intention was to look at it. And I, of course, whenever I hold a book by, you know, an author, I'm always going to grab it and eat it. But there was something about the word happiness that kind of shook me the wrong way. And I'm like, oh, no. So then I really got into it, and the story really grabbed me. And the writing was so profound and written so simply, but with a real deep integrity. And so I don't want to reveal too much of your story, but it was clear to me that I was meant to read this book because there were parts of it, for example, the exercises about, you know, the things that you regretted doing, for example, and your guilt, and then trying to figure out, you know, what really you're guilty of feeling guilty about or regretting. And it really, you know, these are things that I've felt over the years, and there was something very powerful in doing such a simple exercise. So first of all, I want to congratulate you on writing such a book and being able to share it with so many people on the call today or whoever's going to be meant to read this book. So thank you so much for being here and writing this book for me and for anybody else who's going to connect to it.
Thank you, Dorit. This is a book that took me quite a while to write, and I didn't want to write just another happiness book. You know, I definitely wanted to write a book that will really make a difference and would be practical for people to improve their lives, improve how they feel in general about themselves and about their lives in whatever your particular life situation may be.
Yeah, so on that note, you provided a good segue. And so really, you know, what was it about your own personal story that kind of led you to write this book? How did you get from one place to the other?
Oh, well, I had a very rough start to my life where I, you know, many traumatic events during my childhood and growing up just put me in a real bind mentally where I was full of guilt and self-doubt, extreme social phobia. And then I became very obsessive and compulsive, and I just couldn't accept myself. I couldn't accept anything that I did. Nothing was good enough in my own eyes that I did or that I was. And I just really couldn't live with myself. My inner judge was completely out of control. But then I became obsessed with figuring out what does it take to get out of this miserable state. I just couldn't take it anymore. I wanted to feel better. And then I just wanted to figure out what does it take to feel better. Until one day I had an insight. I had an epiphany that just turned everything around for me. And it was a very simple epiphany, very simple thought, simply that I am always doing the best I can with what I know. And we're always doing the best we can with what we know. Best we can at what? At trying to get to a happier place. All we want is to feel better. This was the, as I got deeper and deeper into this thought, into this idea, I realized, wow, this just changes everything. And it means that I'm innocent. It means that I can forgive myself. I started understanding why people do the things they do. And when you understand where people are coming from, you're able to forgive them. You're able to embrace them. But especially it starts with yourself. When you understand why you're doing the things you're doing or why you're not doing what you wish you would be doing, then you're able to just embrace all that. And I knew I had to write about it because I saw this so clearly, this deeper understanding of our true nature. And I knew that the ramifications were great. So, but it did take me a long time to finally get started writing the book. I wanted to really assimilate this new worldview that I had stumbled upon because I wasn't looking for any of this at the time. I just wanted relief from my own misery. Eventually, I did write the book, and I wanted to make something that would transform people's lives just like these ideas transform mine.
Yeah, wow. It's very powerful. You gave so many important, simple ideas, and yet it seems like the common person who wants to feel good won't necessarily go out and write a book about it, and yet you're special in that you took action and you showed up as a writer to give voice to a story that would hopefully give voice to other people's pain and frustration. And so that's a very powerful thing in itself. It's simple, you know, but yet it's hard work to show up in that way and give voice to, you know, your own experience and to use your experience as your own teacher. And it seems like that's the funnel, that's the carrier, that's the vehicle, the experience that you've gone through for all of the bad things and the good things that shaped you into giving voice to this part of your journey and then to ultimately write about it. What parts of the story really helped carry you with your message, and where did you feel the challenges lied in that message sharing?
Well, you know, Dr. Wayne Dyer once said, "Don't die with your song still in you."
Yeah.
And you know, that's what really I have always had those words in my mind, and I knew that my story needed to be told, and that out of that story there were many lessons. For me, the main lesson, the main thing I've learned is that we are all entitled to be in that happy inner heaven that we're all seeking. And we're all capable of this. This is really our natural state. This is what I discovered when I started seeing myself through the eyes of innocence, through the eyes of forgiveness. And when we start out as children, we are in that happy place naturally. You look at little kids, they are absolutely untroubled by all the baggage that we acquire later on, all the guilt, the self-judgment, the labels that we put on ourselves. That's the story that we acquire from others. Others tell us this story, and we take hold of this story and make it our own, and it's just negative beliefs about ourselves, that we're not good enough, that we're not worthy of our own embrace. This is what takes away that natural happy state. And then we fight the rest of our lives. We struggle trying to reacquire that original natural place we had within ourselves. You know, and so that's the unfortunately, that's many people's stories.
Yeah.
You know, those negative beliefs they acquire, negative labels about themselves. I'm not good enough, I'm stupid, whatever it might be. There's so many labels, so many negative words we've come up with. And then to try to prove themselves to the world, just so that they can, we're really trying to prove ourselves to ourselves that we are worthy of our own love. And what we need to do, I found, is to tell ourselves a different story, a more real story of who we really are. And that's all we need, is to realize our real place in the universe, our real mission in life, and to understand that we're all absolutely worthy of our own love. This is a story that brings happiness, the story that we are worthy no matter what, that what we do or not do doesn't determine our value. It only determines is our understanding of reality, and that's constantly shifting and always evolving. So it's just a different way of, it's a reinterpretation of our lives, and that's all it takes.
I love that. What you just said is a reinterpretation of our own lives so that we can get back to that playful childlike state where we're, you know, in that innocent pool. And I just wanted to congratulate you on unpacking this kind of terminology, which to the person who's reading it may seem obvious or like listening to it. But I think in our worldview understanding, to unpack it the way you did makes a lot of sense. And, I found myself nodding, and who could not identify with your message and how many busy messages we get that kind of misdirect us. And so how does your book, help us tell a different story if we're talking about, let's say, giving voice to the bigger story that we don't know is there? We're struggling with trying to prove ourselves, trying to, make a bigger difference, and we think that we're doing the right thing. What techniques, for example, or what tools that you mention in this book that you've written that might help somebody be closer to their own truth and help them tell a different, him or her, help them tell a different story that might, bring him closer to innocence, for example?
Well, let's take the past, for example. All the stuff we did that now we feel we beat ourselves up and we feel guilty and we wonder, how could I have done that? Why didn't I do something else?
Right.
And we drive ourselves crazy with these thoughts.
Absolutely.
And one of the basic themes of my book is that we're always doing the best we can with what we know.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to understand what that really means, it all comes down to the basic building blocks of what drives us, which is pain and pleasure. So simply to reevaluate everything that you did and look at it and ask yourself some basic questions about the decision you made. For example, if you have something that's really bothering you, think about your state of mind at that time. And did you intend for things to turn out the way they did? Ask yourself that honestly. The answer is probably not, because now you're regretting it. Now you feel, my God, I wish I would have done something else. So, of course, you didn't. At the time, you had no idea it would have turned out this way. Would you have chosen differently if you knew then what you know now? Again, the answer is probably yes, you would have chosen differently.
Mm-hmm.
And given what you knew then, could you really have made a different choice? And that is the key question. See, meditating on the inevitability of our actions is the way to self-forgiveness, because our innocence hangs on that we are always acting the only way we can, given our current state of awareness. That is what makes innocence possible. A lot of all the spiritual teachings, all the great spiritual ideals, hang on innocence. They depend on that innocence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That, you know, how can you have forgiveness of everything if we are not innocent? How could you have true compassion? How can you have unconditional love if there are guilty people and not guilty people? How can you embrace all that?
Right.
The only way you can really embrace it is by realizing that rather than having all these random free wills, everybody with their own different agenda in life, that's what we think right now. We think there are good people and bad people out there.
Mm-hmm.
There are worthy people and unworthy people, people who want good things, people who want bad things. That is not based in reality, at least not the reality that I saw and the reality that saved me. The reality that I saw is that rather than having those random, chaotic free wills, we're all really part of something greater, something that's aligned, something that's looking for harmony at all times. And I call that the one will. You can call it the will of God or whatever you like. But we're not an exception to nature, to the universe, to the order of things. Everything we do is always seeking a greater state of harmony. That is really, we all have actually the same ultimate goal in what we're looking for with everything we do. And to meditate on this and realize this, you realize that all your past mistakes were simply based on ignorance. Ignorance is to blame, not you.
That's so, so powerful. It's so interesting that, you know, whatever the simplest things are the ones we tend to overthink, you know, and we tend to get in our way. And it just seems so natural for a baby or a young child to be in this constant harmonious state. And the first word that comes up to me and just keeps on replaying itself as I hear you talk is this whole idea of reflection and thinking. You mentioned meditating, which is also similar to where I'm thinking. And some people are naturally born reflective thinkers, you know, and some people are not. And so when we're trying to get closer to a harmonious state, you know, we can easily overthink things. And I know, you know, as a teacher, you know, I've used reflection and metacognition and all these other reflective type tools to kind of assess, you know, your progress, how you made, you know, changes or, you know, progress from A to B. And as a reflective thinker, I think when you're writing transformational books like this or memoirs, you need to kind of be your inner voice. You constantly have to reflect on path A, was that path B, as you wrote in your story. And it wasn't just telling the reader, you know, look, I did this and this and this. You reflected on it. And I think that's really what grabs people. They want to hear, you know, how they want to see themselves in your story. Oh, yeah, I've been there. I've done that kind of thing. Yeah, I can, you know, I've gotten into my way and I've, you know, messed with the voices of doubt and insecurity and fear. So ultimately, we're trying to work our way past all of these voices and get to this more harmonious state. And so my question here is, really, how can we nurture things like the way you presented in your book? You have tools and exercises for, you know, let's say reflection and self-inquiry. But if a person really is not nurtured that way or doesn't see the value in that, or, you know, as it isn't like a born self-thinker and isn't made that way, and it seems like you had to go through huge hurdles, but yet you were always at the core of your being, you wanted to overcome them. And so I think that you used these tools to help navigate this kind of volatile sort of territory. But for somebody out there who's reading your book and is trying to, you know, get past a hurdle, is it enough for that person to just do the exercises and assuming that they have this kind of self-reflective sort of way about them? Or do they need to kind of work on themselves a little bit more to get there to see better results? Do you see what I'm trying to ask?
Yes. Yes, you know, I try to explain everything in a very clear and logical way where, you know, even without deep meditation or reflection, just your simple logic, your sense of logic, your sense of common sense will say, oh, wow, yeah, this makes a lot of sense. This is how I operate. This is how I work. This is what really drives me. The logic of what that means, of the implications of what's truly driving me and what that makes me, what that means about me.
Okay.
You know, and then another thing I wanted to say is, you know, for the people who don't like to meditate or don't like to sit down and think about things and write them, you know, write a long list and go over it, I would say simply by focusing on the positive in your life, you know, simply writing a list of five things you're grateful for, five things that you feel blessed about in your life. Just write those down, post them in your mirror in the morning, you know, where you look at it every morning, or next to your bed where you can look at them every night. Or post them all around the house. You know, the point is to remind yourself of the positive things in your life, to redirect your focus on that.
Right.
Because that's what determines how you feel, what we focus on.
Absolutely.
You know, how we feel depends on our interpretation of life, of ourselves and of our world. When you interpret yourself as a flawed, incomplete being that's lacking certain things, that's not good enough, you suffer. That is what happens, because you're interpreting yourself in a chaotic, disharmonious state. But if you're able to interpret yourself just a little bit less chaotic, just to focus on what's harmonious in your life, not what you perceive to be in disharmony, focus on what's in harmony, focus on what's working, what's going right, that alone can improve your general state of being, because you're suddenly interpreting things a little bit more positively. The ultimate goal, of course, is to interpret everything as being the way it should be, including yourself, to know that there are no mistakes, to know that everything is going according to plan, according to the way it should go. Plus, that everything is happening the only way it can. That everything that you're doing is the only thing you're capable of doing at the time. And that is not a mistake. That we're all on a path, on a spiritual path of awakening. And this is always happening. When you're able to reinterpret, redefine yourself and your life in that way, then you find the permanent happiness that I'm talking about. But until you're able to do that, at least begin by trying to focus on what's positive, what you feel is positive in your life. Remind yourself constantly of that. And try to put aside the negative, because we tend to focus only on the negative.
Absolutely.
And that's what makes us so miserable.
Absolutely. I get a great sense of peace listening to you and equanimity, just listening to your words. And that, you know, it's very hard for many people, including myself, you know, we're only human, is this whole idea that everything will unfold in divine timing. And for us on planet Earth, divine and human, kind of they have these two chaotic sort of worlds, and we're all into outcomes and focusing on, you know, this should be happening faster, I should be getting better results. You know, how come things aren't moving in the way that I want it to be? And so your idea of writing affirmations or things that have been working or things that we've been grateful for, I found, you know, over time, close that kind of gap and help with those kind of inner voices. And I think also when I read your work, I almost feel like you're speaking when you write. And that is one of my questions is, you know, when we write, we tend to get stuck in our own little worlds and, you know, we're forgetting maybe our reader. And did you intend, when you wrote this book, what was your intention? You know, were you interested in kind of writing like you're speaking to the reader? Because I got that feeling right away, and it came across in a very peaceful way, like you've closed a big, huge chapter in your life, and now you're, you know, blessing us with this new knowledge and experience and message. I mean, do you find that that helped you as a writer trying to establish your message, is to write as if you're speaking? Or did you feel, did you have to struggle a little bit when you first started writing this book?
Well, yeah, it was an 8-year process, actually, to write
the
book.
Yeah.
You know, it took me a while to, I wanted to write not just an ordinary book. I wanted to write an extraordinary book that was really accessible, that was at the highest level.
Right.
And so I put myself up to quite a challenge. And so I knew I needed to learn how to write effectively, how to find my voice. And then that took a while, and I took my time with it. You know, there was no rush. I wanted to write only when I was inspired to do so. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I wrote just a paragraph a day or every other day, that was good enough, as long as I was making a little bit of progress. As far as maintaining, like, a conversational tone, I did try to do that consciously. And one way that I did it is I would just talk into my recorder ideas, mm-hmm. and then transcribe that into paper and try to keep as much as possible of the natural language in there.
Okay.
You know, just to make it as accessible and as easygoing as I could. I didn't want the message to get lost in fancy words or, you know, difficult to understand passages. I wanted just to express these ideas as clearly and logically and rationally as I could, while making it as interesting as possible at the same time.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say you took your time, because it's kind of like against the logic of the universe, you know, the chaos that goes out there. And I just love that you're giving people who want to give voice to their own, let's say, transformational book, self-help book, the permission to take their time and to, you know, write when they're inspired. May not go with many people out there because they want to get their book done quickly and they don't want to wait for inspiration, but having the patience to speak through a recorder is a great idea, you know, because I help writers, you know, ultimately write their stories. And so if they're struggling, many of them struggle with writing their books, for example, and they are in the phase one where they're just kind of like, how do I write the darn thing? And so it's refreshing to hear from somebody like you who's, you know, using the vehicle of experience to wrap your message around, you know, these words of taking your time and using your speaking voice as opposed to trying to figure out what your writing voice is, you know. And that, I think, is a big hurdle for many, many authors out there, and a lot of them have embraced what you're talking about, which is using an MP3 player or, you know, talking and feeling comfortable with the speaking voice, because ultimately that's where your powerful message, I think, lies, no?
Yes, I think that your speaking voice your writing voice should be as close as possible to your speaking voice. That is what's natural to you. That is who you are, is mm-hmm. how you speak. That problem I had was that my speaking voice is not very recognizable by the automatic language interpreters, so I had to actually write, listen to it again and type it in myself. But for a lot of people, that wouldn't be a problem. So that's a great way to just get your ideas into the computer and to maintain your own voice, I think. And definitely that's the way to go.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, I love it, because you're saying things that actually also embrace the concept of your book, because you're trying to help the reader get to a more harmonious state, right? And so by embracing this idea that your writing and speaking voice can be one, right? Isn't that a little similar to this whole concept of what you're also talking about in the book, where, you know, we're embracing our imperfections as a way to get back to our own original state of who we are, so that we can be in a less chaotic state?
Yes, you know, to know that who you are is never a mistake. That is just the key to overcoming all this guilt and all this shame, all this feeling, the feelings of insecurity, of inferiority, that we're not good enough. All that gets wiped away when you just embrace yourself just as you are. That is so simple, and that is how we start out our lives, without questioning anything about ourselves.
Right.
All these rules and labels, all these things come later on, and they're taught to us. And they are absolutely made up by society, by humanity, by the church, by whatever you authority out there is making these rules. But there are actually societies, some of them are still around, like in the South Pacific, there are still pockets of society that don't believe in guilt. They don't know what that even means. They just view when you make mistakes, you are misguided.
Right.
You are ignorant. You need correction. But that doesn't make you a lesser being. That doesn't make you unworthy. They don't get rid of you and banish you from society. They just work with you. And if you can't be worked on, yeah, they put you aside, but they still don't think of you as a lesser being. They just see you as sick. And the Buddhists, you know, Buddhism, one of the main tenets is that ignorance is the cause of all our suffering, and that we only are capable of wise or unwise behavior. So wisdom is just learning. Learning is what we're here to do. All of these ideas free us from all these labels that are not based in reality and that create all our suffering. You remove that suffering and you have that happiness that we're all looking for, which is natural to us.
You have a new baby.
Yes, that baby's still in there. That little kid that's joyous, that's so excited about everything, that finds life fascinating, still in there. It never dies. It never goes away. We never became, suddenly we reach a certain age and we become guilty, we lose that innocence. That doesn't happen.
Right.
That is not reality. Things get more complicated and muddled on the surface. Yes, it's harder to see what we're really trying to do when we do certain things, but it always comes down to the same thing. We're trying to return to that happy place that we started out with. We're trying to return to that Garden of Eden, but this time, to get back there, we need to know exactly why we were innocent in the first place.
So all the exercises that you suggest in this book will help us get to that more natural state?
Yes, everything, most of the exercises are aimed at redefining how we view ourselves, how we interpret and perceive ourselves and each other and the things that happen in our lifetimes. And it's by this reinterpretation, by this shift in perception, that we are able to get rid of these negative beliefs, these beliefs that reject what happens, that feel like things shouldn't be happening the way they are, or that we are not where we need to be in our lives, that the past should have been different. All these beliefs can be cleansed away. And I don't want to say reprogrammed, because all we got to do is remove the beliefs. And then, you know, actually, we start out with no beliefs. And that's enough to create that inner heaven that we're all looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a matter of unlearning more than it is learning.
Right. I think that's why people who work with children have a better chance of getting there faster.
Or animals, you know. You see it in nature everywhere, this natural state of just flowing with life, not questioning everything.
Or just hanging out in nature for a while, you know, not necessarily around a lion, but, you know, in like a natural state where you're surrounded by trees and grass and you're, you know, obviously able to see things in a different way that's not an unnatural state.
Yes, I think it is crucial, especially in today's age of constant connectivity.
Yeah.
To disconnect, to take the time at least once a week. I would say every day. But if you can't do that, start out with once a week, just having time where you go off on your own and you completely shut down everything, all your gadgets.
Right.
You shut down your cell phone and you just go out there into nature if you can.
Right.
And just be. Realize that it is really so simple.
Absolutely.
Just forget about all your problems. Put them behind. Tell yourself, for the next hour, I'm going to put everything behind. I'm going to just put it all in a little box, all my problems, all my worries and concerns, all my self-doubts, all the shoulds and shouldn't haves. Let me put them in that little box, and I'll open that box again when I come out of the forest or wherever you're headed to. But just give yourself that hour. To just be and breathe and smile and you know, hug a tree if you want, you know, whatever you want to do, but just disconnect from all that noise, all those labels and beliefs that are constantly bouncing in our heads, and just keep doing that, and you will find that slowly you start just returning to that natural place. And if you can also start, you know, doing that hour, just doing your positive affirmations, doing just that, trying to work on reinterpreting your life in a more positive way, reinterpreting yourself. That is what we need to do, you know, in this day and age.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly embrace that, because I think anybody who, it doesn't matter what job you have to constantly reinterpret your life, because there's so many things that are pulling us away from that special place, and it's really hard to do, you know, on a constant basis. So I appreciate these suggestions. And we have like a 5 minutes left, and I wanted to make sure that anybody who's listening to the show, either live or the replay version, knows how to connect with you. So share with us where we can find more about you, buy the book, learn more about any events that you have in the works and things like that.
Yes. Well, my book is available on Amazon.com in the paperback and Kindle format. And I have a website dedicated to the book. It's called MagnificentTruths.com. You can also get there simply typing mtruths.com, the letter M and the word truths.com. And through the website, you can get a special offer where there are gifts being offered with the purchase of the book, that are offered by other authors, and stuff such as free downloads of e-books or e-courses, very good stuff. So that's still going on. It's the promotion for the book launch, which happened just 3 weeks ago. And the book has been very well received so far. It became an Amazon international bestseller just 2 days after the launch. So we're extremely happy with the reception, with the great reviews that it's been getting. It seems to be resonating with people, and that is all I could ever ask for.
Yeah. That is magnificent, absolutely. And who knows, more power to you and your book. And, you know, we'll end with just one more question, and this has to do with writing. Is what advice can you give to writers who perhaps either want to write this kind of self-help transformational book or another kind of book? What advice can you offer?
Well, you know, the best way to write is when you don't depend on your writing for as a way of living. It's not your income.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thankfully that was not the case for me. I was doing it just for the love of it, just as a way to give what I've received. If you can get to that place, that's fantastic. Where you're writing, where you see it as a wonderful project. It is a marathon. It's not a sprint. You just got to do a little bit each day. Just stay with it. Stay consistent.
Right.
And if you can, write only when you're truly inspired. Wait for an inspiration, because that's when the magic happens. If you force it, it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you might have to force it just to get yourself back in that chair.
Right.
But develop a routine that puts you in that place of creativity. I also tried to do that. You know, before I would write, I would often try to go out and walk in the forest for a while, or on the beach, wherever I might be at the time, just to get to that place of inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
And these are all little tricks that you learn along the way. It is not easy. It is not easy by any means to write a book. I thought it would be easy because I wrote essays in college and I thought I was good at it. But
right.
From going from an essay, from a 15-page essay to a 270-page book, it's a whole different ballgame, and you just got to be patient with yourself, stay consistent, know that it's going to take a long time if you want to do it right, and just give yourself all the time you need.
Those are great pieces of advice. Excellent. Thank you so much, Daniel, for being here as a guest for the show and sharing with us all of your wisdom. And hopefully we'll be able to connect with your next book. And do you have a next book out in the works, or are you just taking a break right now?
Oh, I'm taking a break. After the 8 years, I think I'm just going to work with this book and promote it and represent it as best I can. I put everything I had into this one, you know, all that I had to give. So anything that comes afterwards, you know, I will see, we'll take it as it goes.
That's great. Yeah, I can understand what it's like to give birth in child's ways, but this is...
Yeah, it is like giving birth to a child, that's right.
Yeah, it's pretty intense, and I could feel the passion that came out and the hard work. So thank you so much for sharing your message with us, and again, find Daniel at www.mf.com, is that correct?
MTruth.
MTruths.com, truths.com. Yes. Thank you, Daniel. Perfect.
Thank you so much, Dorit. It was great to be on your show.
Wonderful. And we'll connect in the internet land somewhere in the near future, hopefully.
Absolutely.
Take care. Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.